thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I think we will.
Here's John Williams.
Think some big thoughts today because... Hi, it's John. It's 111. This is WGN. I'm live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
And
it's hot outside. People are not only in short sleeves, some of them are wearing tank tops. I think it snowed 2 days ago. But the big thoughts we're going to think today include a conversation with Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist who's everywhere and whose latest book is Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, boy, John, astrophysics, that's going to be really interesting. Well, of course, the guy is really interesting. He's funny and he's conversational and he's going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour, Neil deGrasse Tyson. We may also interrupt this show today to bring you the White House press briefing, also known as the Sean Spicer Show. It was at yesterday's Sean Spicer Show when further asked about the president possibly taping recordings in the White House that he said...
Can I follow up on the tape question from last week? As you know, several Republicans have joined Democrats in seeking additional information from the White House in writing about the existence of any tapes. Is the White House intending to cooperate with those requests and furnish that information as requested in writing?
I think I made it clear last week that the president has nothing further on that. Hunter.
Wait. Does that mean that the president will deny the
request? I think I was very clear that the president would have nothing further on that last week.
Describing a situation which the president would defy the legislative branch's request. That's what you're saying.
Alexis, I made it clear what the president's position is on that issue. Hunter.
People clearly...
And then it goes on. He does... Poor Sean Spicer. He's got a job that just gets more and more miserable every single day. And every single day, his expression looks more and more like he does not want to be there. And we thought he wasn't going to be today, but now the word is that the president is going to trot him out there. Now he's going to try and make sense of all of this for us. Doing the same as Callum Borchers, who is the media and politics reporter for the Washington Post. He joins us live on WGN Radio. Callum, it's John. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. Glad to be with you.
Your piece is about a couple of things, one of them being how the media is handling this and the conservative media is handling this, correct?
Yeah, I took a look at sort of a roundup beginning last night and then into this morning of how, if at all, this was playing in the conservative press. And I say if at all because some of what I observed was seemingly a pretty clear effort to act as if this just isn't the big story, that, you know, whatever the president disclosed classified information to Russia, hey, look over here, did you see this thing about the private investigator in the Seth Rich case saying that he was maybe talking to WikiLeaks before he was shot last year? That was the lead story this morning on the Fox News website. It was the lead story on Breitbart, on the Drudge Report. Sort of downplaying the what is actually the big news of the day.
I'm sorry, I don't know much about that story, and that's the lead on these conservative posts, huh?
Well, that's exactly it. And then the other thing, of course, is to the extent that the Russian disclosure is being covered, it is generally being covered through the lens of a leak problem, right? So it's not a problem. You know, the president has broad, which is true, the president has broad authority to declassify information, so he almost certainly did not break the law. So that makes it automatically okay. The real problem is that somebody talk to the press about it. This is the White House line that we've heard over and over really since Inauguration Day, right, where the president has been on the warpath against leaks.
It's possible that he was the leaker this time, though. I mean, he's the one that even on his own Twitter account this morning admitted that he did give information to the Russians, right?
He basically did, yes. And that's part of what has been so confusing about the response. You had the White House last night trot out H.R. McMaster, who is the National Security Advisor, to say that the Washington Post story is false. Now, it was kind of what we would call a non-denial denial in the sense that it didn't actually address the specific claims made within our report. He sort of put up these side issues and said, you know, it is completely untrue that the president discussed sources and methods with the Russian diplomats. Now, our report specifically says that he didn't discuss sources and methods with the Russian diplomats. It was a straw man argument. And so at the same time, they're trying to present the idea initially that the story is false. And then Trump comes out this morning and basically throws his own staff under the bus more or less says on Twitter, yeah, I did it, but I'm allowed to. You
know? Understood. Callum, hold on 1 second. Steve Bertrand, is that press briefing started?
Yeah, it is. It's not on camera, but we are getting audio now. And this is Sean
classification
Spicer,
authority. My
live
understanding
at the
is the president, of course, has classification authority. They're not synonymous, though, right? So the president can always discuss common threats or common issues with host nations, with other heads of government or other government officials as he deems appropriate to tackle the threats that our country faces. But that's, they're, just so you're clear, I mean, there are two separate issues, but yes, he does on the second, because that's not a question of what he thinks. That's sort of like a fact. Like,
just to verify, the last thing that General McMaster said, what you just said, so the president wasn't aware, this wasn't a part of his briefing, so to suggest he revealed it is impossible. Are you saying that the president didn't say what is being ordered?
I'm not going to get into, I'm not going to get into the contents of the conversation. What I will just say is, as I mentioned, it wasn't part of his briefing. So if that wasn't part of it, to suggest that therefore he released something would not, it just defies logic.
So if it wasn't part of this briefing, in a way, was there a failure?
I'm not.
Of the people underneath him, was there a failure that it didn't rise to the level?
No, I'm sorry, that's a good point. It is not routine. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, but generally speaking, when the president is briefed, and it's not just this president, when presidents are briefed, they are presented with outcomes. Here's the threats that we face, here's whatever. And it's not like it is not always common that therefore they would get into all the sources and methods that undermines it. That's just not always how it happens. And so they are presented with, here are the threats that we face, here's the circumstances, here's the issues that are in front of you.
I guess what I'm asking, he was fully prepared going into this meeting?
Of course.
Sean.
Olivia.
Sean.
Thanks, Sean. Just two for you. Can you say whether or not there's an active investigation of these leaks, either formal or informal?
I cannot. Try.
Thanks, Sean. Can I just get one more? What's something that General McMaster declined to answer on two occasions from behind that podium that's causing some unhappiness on the Hill, the refusal to say whether the Western Wall is in Israel or not? Can you explain why you guys can't answer that question?
I mean, the Western Wall is obviously one of the holy sites in the Jewish faith. It's clearly in Jerusalem. But there's been it's an issue that has had serious consideration. It'll be a topic that's going to be discussed during the president's trip between the parties that he meets with. But obviously, I think this stems from a comment that was made yesterday, in which was not the policy of the United States. And so I think just because – so just to be clear about what was said yesterday.
Can you talk briefly about the ripple of information and how it came out of the meeting that occurred last week in the Oval Office with the representatives of the Russian government? I'm trying to better understand where and how this information could have leaked.
I don't know.
Okay. And talking about it as a national security threat, you've spoken with the president, obviously, about this. What's his thinking on the information that leaked? And what does he think about the article that was released by the Washington Post?
Well, I think, consistent with what he has said for a long time, that the leaks of classified information or sensitive information present – there's a reason that they're classified, and that disclosure of them, the non-authorized disclosure of them, present a threat to national security. Sarah.
Thanks, John. There's been reporting that suggests Israel is the country that provided that intelligence to the U.S. Whether it was Israel or not, has the administration had contact with that ally to potentially smooth over any complications that might have arisen from this being shared with the Russians? Have you reached out to the country that provided that intelligence?
Obviously, I'm not going to get into that kind of discussion. What I will say is, as I mentioned earlier, that we appreciate the strong relationship that we have with Israel with respect to intelligence sharing, and hope to continue to grow that bond, but I'm not going to comment on specifically where it came from. Veronica.
Sean, can we get a White House reaction or the president's reaction to the report that Seth Rich was emailing WikiLeaks before his murder?
I'm not aware of. I generally I don't get updates on.
Well, we seem to
have a great influence on where the leaks came from. If they could potentially, I mean, there's a lot of implications in the story, of course. But
I understand that. But to, for me to comment from here about an ongoing investigation, I believe it's still ongoing. I don't even know the status of it in terms of D.C. But it would be highly inappropriate to do that. John Gizzi.
Thank you, Sean. Two questions. First, the nature of the information that the president is alleged to have shared are the kinds of things that the Five Eyes allies share among each other. Is this a sign that that list could be expanded, or that the president is considering expanding the Five Eyes, the allies we share intelligence with, on a regular basis?
I would just go back to the point that I think whether it's this particular country or any other, it is quite commonplace for us to share information on common threats that our countries face or two countries face, or a variety of other information that gets threatened. It is a very commonplace thing to occur.
And the other thing is, what's lost in all of this was that day the president met with Dr. Kissinger. What advice did Dr. Kissinger give him on anything? Was there any readout of their conversation?
I didn't get one at the time. As generally speaking, we don't get readouts of that. Cecilia.
You had these news headlines you didn't want. You've got the story that landed in your lap today. I'm sure you heard Senator Corker say that this White House is in a downward spiral. How do you view the current state of things right now? Is a downward spiral fair, unfair? Is chaotic fair, unfair? And does this White House need a reset?
Well, I think we're doing, the president's committed to enacting his agenda. He feels very strongly about what he's doing and why he's doing it. The events that occurred today are not helpful, first and foremost, to national security beyond any other issue. But obviously, the president's very proud of the work and the accomplishments that he's had in these first few months, and looking forward to this trip around the country, around the world, that I think is really going to continue to grow the relationships that he's already started to build.
Is there any soul searching that's being done, any reflection that, or any blame even being placed for sort of the current state of chaos, if you will, inside the West Wing, or in your colleagues, the president himself?
I guess the way I'd answer that is, when you look at what appears to be somebody intentionally leaking classified information, and you're asking where the blame should be placed, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, it is to realize that somebody has intentionally gone out once again. If you start to go back over the last couple of months, how many times there has been an unauthorized disclosure of national security? That is, as I've said it from this podium before, but it's extremely troubling. And I think that when you ask, you know, how we feel about it, when you are committed to doing, whether it's economic policy or foreign policy that is in the best interest of the country, and people are going out intentionally leaking classified information that threatens national security, as I said, it's dangerous. April.
Sean, could you tell us how the president gets his intelligence briefings, because we understand that each president has them differently. They ask for them differently. How does this president receive his intelligence briefings?
It's an interesting question. I don't sit in on the briefing. I know every day a team comes over and, I should probably follow up on it before I get too far ahead, but they come in person and present him with information, and it's classified.
Does he read any part of it, or is he given the information?
I don't sit in on it, so I don't know.
All right, to follow up on that, a couple of questions. The statement from McMaster begs the question as to the statement about not having parts of the intelligence that the president talked about to Russia, begs a couple of questions. Why was that not included? And some are asking, in the intelligence community, does this go to the fact that the president may not be trusted with this information? And also, it goes into, again, how does he get his information and why it was left out?
So I know you stepped out for a while. We actually went over this.
I'm sorry, I was coughing.
No, I just, but we went over this. I hope you feel better. Basically, the answer that I gave, I think it was either Blake or Trey, was that generally speaking, the president's presented with, you know, the end result of the intelligence. Here are the threats. Here are the issues that are facing us. Generally speaking, they don't go into the sources and methods.
Has there ever been a concern that this president was not able to handle the intelligence information, and they've kind of crafted it to a piece where he would not get in trouble if it were to slip out?
No, George.
Okay, wait, I'm not.
No, you are. I mean, this is everyone gets a turn. This isn't.
Well, so a couple people had more, and I want to ask something about Secret Service.
Okay.
I understand that Dave Garrett is being eyed as the head of the Uniform Division of Secret Service. And Dave Garrett, during the Clinton administration, was reprimanded for saying the N-word to a female pass holder here at the White House. What do you say to that?
You have to believe me that I don't get into the different divisions of employment at the Secret Service. I think that... Sure, as is all the federal government, but I think specifically as a division of the Secret Service, Kathy at the Secret Service is probably, in the Public Affairs Office, is probably your best bet. George.
A trip question. There's been a lot of reporting in Israel.
We had think this would have been perfect for this one.
There's been a lot of reporting in Israel that the president was going to go to Masada. That's something that General McMaster didn't mention. Has that been scrubbed? And if he is going, what's the message you're trying to send?
So if I can, it is our goal to have an off-the-record briefing tomorrow, probably sometime later in the day, on the logistics of the trip. Once we can lock down that time, and the goal would be late tomorrow, but it may slip. It just and we can kind of walk through the logistics of the trip with you. But obviously, there's a lot of things that either aren't finalized or for security reasons. But I don't want to get into anything beyond what General McMaster said today. And our goal is to we'll have notice out to you guys at some point what the details of the trip are. Glenn.
You're listening to live coverage of the White House briefing, an unusual one in that the cameras were not allowed. We'd been given indications earlier today that microphones would not be either, that it would just be a gaggle where Sean Spicer talked with reporters. They made a change, allowed audio there, and so you heard some of it there. The press
you were
secretary.
Dialing around. Yeah, you didn't see it. Pardon me, Steve, you didn't see it on TV. I was trying to catch up with it, but then I was reminded, oh, yeah, for some reason they did not want the cameras on, though otherwise it was – Well, a very normal press briefing.
They actually expanded it in a way because they weren't going to allow the cameras or the microphones either.
Yeah.
And then they decided to do that. So.
Yeah, but I didn't hear anything there that we shouldn't see.
No.
I mean, you know, Sean Spicer doesn't want to either answer questions he doesn't know the answer to or say things that he's been told not to expand on.
It may well be the fact that they wanted the attention, the video today to be of President Trump in his meeting with President Erdogan. Or H.R. McMaster in his briefing earlier today. So why offer another sort of picture to compete with that?
That's an interesting sort of strategy, isn't it? Because you're right. People are the Sean Spicer press briefings are must-see TV for a lot of people. And then those clips get played on sites and on newscasts. And maybe that crowds the president's message out. I'm not saying he's hogging the camera. I'm saying that literally he doesn't want it to be dwelling on this. But if you don't do a press briefing, that looks bad. So no video, you get the information, and he has a better chance now of getting the...
And then the TV news stories have a choice to choose between the president or the national security advisor.
John Williams here. It's 1:38. Steve, we had to cut our interview short with the Washington Post reporter because of the Sean Spicer press briefing, which I always find informative and entertaining. But I've then got some questions that maybe you know the answer to, maybe you don't. Can I just think out loud here for a second?
Sure.
Why were the Sergeys, Lavrov, and Kislyak? This all goes back to that meeting Donald Trump had with the Russians last week. Why did they take a meeting with them? Why were they there that day right after, right next to the Comey firing, about the Russians? Why did he take a meeting with the Russians?
Well, it's interesting. President Trump had a phone conversation with Vladimir Putin a few days before, and he was asked about that, and Trump's the president said, well, Putin asked me to meet with him, and he goes, what am I going to do, say no? And opponents of him say, well, yeah, you would say no. I mean,
that's an option.
Just because the president of Russia tells you or asks you to do something doesn't mean you have to give them a White House audience. You could have had them meet with the Secretary of State, but that's where it came from, apparently. President Putin asked that it happen.
That's interesting. And maybe it's a snub. Maybe it's more than just a simple no, or can we delay the meeting when somebody as important as Russia in the world says, can you meet with the foreign ambassador and the, Kislyak?
Is the Russian
ambassador Russians, and foreign minister.
Yeah. Correct, right.
So maybe it's harder to say no than it would be if I said, hey, Steve, can I come over for coffee? You could say no, or you could say, well, it's looking real bad right now. Could we meet later?
This is
really putting me in an awkward position,
exactly.
Vladimir.
We're not going to give you an A-level meeting. We'll give you an A-minus meeting.
Pence's schedule is wide open, and we haven't even seen Paul Ryan or Reince Priebus for weeks. So if you can find them, you just meet. But they didn't do that.
No.
So we all thought it looked bad, juxtaposed as it were, next to the firing of Comey and the Russian-Clinton nexus. So the question lingered, did the president tape conversations with the former FBI director? And that was Nixonian. And to underscore that point, Henry Kissinger met with the president that day, too. The same day that the Russians meet with him, there is Henry Kissinger, like, dropped out of the blue. When's the last time you saw Henry Kissinger? He was meeting with Donald Trump that day, too. Rush Limbaugh laughed at the audacity of it all, saying Trump was trolling Democrats by talking to these guys. And to further thumb his nose at the American press, only Russian photographers were allowed in the meeting with the ambassador and foreign minister that day. Why weren't the Americans allowed to take pictures of that meeting?
I think that probably was a snub, and it didn't work for them, did it?
The optics were just bizarre. We didn't dare at the time, though, think that anything bad was actually going to come of this. It was just Donald Trump being Donald Trump. And now we have the Washington Post saying that he told the Russians highly classified information, which the Trump administration denies. But a lot of people just don't believe the president.
I don't think they did. They don't really deny that he gave them information. Right. I mean, there's not a denial that he did. The National Security Advisor saying that it was appropriate in the context of that conversation for him to do it.
Right. But that could mean a lot of things. For instance, it is, quote unquote, wholly appropriate for the president to say anything he wants. It's not against the law, for instance, for him to reveal classified information to the Russians.
Well, that would be wholly legal. But yeah, he's saying it was also
wholly
inappropriate.
Appropriate.
Right.
It was appropriate.
You know, he only said wholly. Maybe we got the wrong wholly.
Maybe it's, you think it was divine?
Wholly appropriate.
I don't think so, Steve. Okay. I think you're inventing an expression that is not previously.
Outside the Oval Office here.
You've kind of got to. So the Washington Post says that he gives classified information so secret that it requires a code word to talk about, even among U.S. officials. I did not know that existed. So if I wanted to say, Steve, that Elif was a very sensitive subject here. In order for you and I to even initiate a conversation, I guess, I don't know how this works, but I have to use a code word. Maybe the code word is coffee. So I say, Steve, I need to talk to you about coffee. And then you say, okay, let's talk about coffee. And we both go, wink, wink. And then maybe we do a fist bump and touch rings.
So there's secret, there's top secret classified. This is above that where just because you have clearance doesn't mean you have access to it. You've also got to have the code word.
So if we have the code words, I'm just assuming this works. I'm telling you that the quote was a code word just to talk about it among U.S. officials. It requires a code word just to talk about it among U.S. officials. And this is this, and that, according to WAPO, is the thing that Donald Trump was saying to the Russian ambassador and foreign minister. So at that time, some people evidently left the room to notify our intelligence agencies. I mean, in real time, they said, oh, my God, this can't wait. They leave the room to go tell their superiors that Donald Trump has revealed this information. Now, the president and all of us are kind of curious, how did this information get out of this room? How is it, quote unquote, leaked? How does the Washington Post know about it, for instance? I want to know how many people were in that room.
Well, I don't think there were many, right?
Sure.
McMaster said there were, named a few.
Yeah.
But then it rippled out, right? If they were notifying foreign governments or talking about it within the Intelligence Committee, I think that's probably, you know, once it got to that next ring or the ring after that, that's where the leak probably came from, not from within the room directly. And that's an assumption I'm making.
Well, that's kind of where I'm living right now, Steve. I'm trying to figure this out because it would seem to me like if they want to know who, for instance, talked to the Washington Post or talked to somebody that talked to the Washington Post, how many people were in the room? I'll bet McMaster didn't say it. I don't know that the president did it. A colleague of ours wondered if maybe the Russians themselves didn't do it, but I think it just underscores that there's more about this story we don't know than we do.
And, you know, in all fairness, it is a damaging leak. It is an embarrassing leak for the government. It does damage to the government. People might not be recognizing that because it also fuels their criticism of the president. But, you know, this is information that can do harm. And so when he and McMaster talk about cracking down on the leak, that's just not just talk either. I mean, there's arguments for bad on either side.
Oh, absolutely.
Here, right?
I think we have parallel conversations here. And the second one, which, maybe Fox is more interested in, and maybe we should all be a little more interested in, is what's going on here? Why can't they contain information in this White House?
Well, and if you want to make the argument that this president's over his head, that he can't handle it, keeps making mistakes, you might giggle with the leak a little bit. But the fact is that this was seems to have been a pretty big mistake by the president that puts assets at risk. And so that's the sort of thing you wouldn't want the world to know. But by the leak, the world now knows.
Well, and it's maybe a problem that they've created themselves, this sort of bullying. However you would describe the persona of this White House, this is what you get. This is what you get. If you'd like a little more loyalty or allegiance or, I don't know, circumspection, then you've got to, I'm not sure that's a word, but it's not circumcision I'm thinking of. If you want people to be circumspect, is that circumspection?
How about adult-like?
If that's what you want, then you have to behave that way. They haven't, so I'm not surprised, are you, that they don't have as many allies, they don't have as much allegiance in this White House as they'd like.
Well, if this is coming from the intelligence community, and it seems that it is, he is likening them to Nazis. And he's belittled the FBI, he's belittled the intelligence community's ability to gather information. So he hasn't fostered a positive relationship there, certainly.
You think? Okay, couple questions, couple comments. The number's 312-981-7200. We'll pick up your phone lines now if you want to be part of the conversation, and we'd love it if you would. 312-981-7200. Hey, Mike, jump in here. What did you want to say?
I just wanted to say that about the code word thing, the asset itself is a code word asset. You and Steve don't need to exchange secret gestures to talk about it. The highest classification is John O'Malley. He's actually Redfish, so Redfish is the code word. And the thing about this asset is he's in with ISIS somewhere, and he's been betrayed. The Russians can reverse engineer this. And because the Russians are allies with Iran, this asset is in trouble or dead, or his network is dead, and no one will willingly give us any information about any assets at risk that can be betrayed. And this is, extremely
that's why
serious.
I thought, that's why I wondered if the reason that they had to leave the room. If it's true, and I don't know this, we've all heard the story. I haven't heard it talked about since the initial Washington Post story.
They're not denying it. They're saying it's okay they did it.
Okay, but here's my point. If somebody had to leave the room right now, it may be because somebody's life is in jeopardy. It's a matter of literally getting that asset out of wherever they are because they've just been blown.
Yeah, right. That would be very interesting if it was our asset, but it was someone else's asset. So imagine the length of time that took and what network is just blown and the money and the investments and the loss of life, and no one will ever give us information like that for the foreseeable future. And if you want to know who leaked this, the Russians leaked it. The Russians leaked it to embarrass us. Yeah. So there's no big secret. Yeah. It was the Russians, McMasters, and Tillerson and Trump were in that room. All right. Eliminate by process of elimination.
There may have been more than that, but that's literally, I mean, if somebody's got a seating chart, I think you could, Steve, you described the ripples, but it starts with a pebble. Who is that first person that said something they should not have said? Mike, I appreciate your call. Yeah, you're making some interesting points there, and I don't mind you thinking out loud like the rest of us. In fact, I'm going to go from Mike real quick to Eddie, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
John, hey, John, hi. What do you think the code word is? I think it may have been Donald Duck that they said out loud. What do you think?
I don't know. Everybody's got a code word for them for Secret Service, if that's the path you're going down. I don't know how this works. I did not know. It's kind of intriguing, isn't it? A notion so secret that we can't begin talking about it unless we use a code word. Maybe, well, you know, the previous caller said it. Say that again?
Did they say the code word somewhere on TV, or is there an audio of it somewhere when everybody got up from the room on that seating chart?
I don't know. Well, Paul Ryan's asked for a transcript of the meeting. I suppose maybe somebody was there recording it. I hope it's not made public. I hope, you know, frankly, I'm not even comfortable with the fact that we know how our intelligence communities work, that they have code words and things like that. This is not something we should be talking about on WGN. We should not even know that.
On the internet.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call. I'm glad you joined us. It's 1:49. And the number is 312-981-7200. Neil deGrasse Tyson has the book Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. Have you seen this guy? He's been everywhere. It debuts this week at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. He'll be in our studio. Actually, was earlier today. We'll talk to him from our studios in the 2 o'clock hour. You know, if all of this, we had to cut short an interview we had with Callum Borchers, who writes about media and politics for the Washington Post, because Sean Spicer's press briefing began, and we wanted to listen in on that. But if what the president did was legal, and a lot of this is partisan politics and everybody looking at it through their own filter, okay, fine. That may be what happened there. But if nothing else, it reminds us of how reckless the president is. McMaster said today that the president was unaware. This is kind of shocking. The president was unaware of where the information came that he was giving to the Russians. So he's in a conversation. It's a free-flowing exchange of ideas. And the president is now revealing something whose source he's not sure of. I don't know how the president got it if he didn't. Where did he get this information? Did somebody tell him or did he read it? But here he is having this free-flowing conversation with these top Russian officials. And McMaster said that he did not know, the president did not know where he got that information, but he has it. If he knew where it came from, if he knew more about its classification, maybe he would not have said that. The bottom line is that he was being very careless with this information. It was about careless regard for information when he was running for president that he was most critical of Hillary Clinton.
We can't have someone in the Oval Office who doesn't understand the meaning of the word confidential or classified.
There's 100 cuts of him out there doing that on campaign trails. I mean, that was a theme. Not a bad theme either. And now it's coming home to roost. Paul Ryan said as much. Time and again, he said Hillary Clinton was too reckless with information. And remember, it was Paul Ryan that said that maybe Hillary Clinton, as a candidate, as a former Secretary of State and Senator, as a candidate who would be allowed to see these sort of confidential pieces of information. Paul Ryan said that she should not be allowed to see information because she's too reckless with it. And all that's coming home to roost now. So that's where we are on the story, I guess, today. I could pick up, take a couple calls here. We got about a minute and a half. It's 1:56 on WGN. Again, Neil deGrasse Tyson will join us a little later on. This is Gene. Hey, Gene, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Well, I think it's the result of people who voted for someone without thinking that change means nothing if the person going into the office hasn't a clue of what the job involves. The reports come from everywhere that he watches TV all day. He will not tolerate briefings of more than 3 pages, whereas Obama got 14 to 16, usually, they say. I mean, the man is completely clueless, and God knows how he's gotten where he's gotten it in New York City with his wealth. It must have been with clout and gut instinct.
Yeah,
that's not the kind of president we need.
Thanks for the phone call. All right, we'll end it there.
thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
This is me. It's 209. Beautiful showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, overlooking the beautiful Michigan Avenue. Come down and wave to the man.
Lord have mercy.
In the radio bubble, I'll wave right back to you in this hour. The Miss USA controversy. Neil deGrasse Tyson in just a couple seconds. We'll continue to monitor the Trump-Russian thing here, the release that the president may have given to the Russians in that meeting. CNN in a scroll now, Steve, says that Israel was a source for some of the information on ISIS that Trump shared with the Russian officials. So Israel was the source of some of that, says CNN.
And the president heading to Israel later this
week. Oh, my gosh, I was thinking about that. And they're billing this as his visit to the centers of the world's three great religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And I'm thinking, can't he just go to Altoona this week? The president, if he were in Kansas City and then maybe Atlanta, would make me feel so good. Let him do one of those rallies and everybody will love everything he said. And he won't do any damage in Altoona. But I'm worried about the optics or the vocabulary of this man in that part of the world.
You know, it is amazing. I can't think of a White House where everything we just find out. You know, I mean, there's so many leaks here that if you it's like Chicago weather. If you want to find out something, just wait a minute. It'll change or it'll come to you. Yeah. And here we are now finding out what countries these came from, apparently.
Yeah, that's another thing. We shouldn't be knowing. I shouldn't be able to tell you that.
Well, and that's when, you know, the point that's a little more sympathetic to the White House, it's like, well, you know, this isn't helping things.
Absolutely right, Steve. I mean, those are, as I described them earlier, parallel tracks, and we all tend to focus one on the other, maybe depending on our politics or maybe depending on an honest judgment of the gravity of the news, but that's not a small affair.
So if you're a leaker, you know, the question I guess you're being asked is, do you care so much about the country that you're willing to do the damage this way?
What's your agenda?
In order to expose that, you know, that the president is willing to do that. I mean, I don't think it would be a purely political leak if it's coming from intelligence and within the administration has a lot of people willing to talk about other people within the administration, apparently.
It's 2:11 on WGN. Neil deGrasse Tyson's latest book is Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. He was able to come into the studios this morning around 9:30 or 10 o'clock, and we were able to tape a conversation with him, and we'll play back part of that conversation on our Saturday show. But I'm just going to give you a hint of it here, because in the studio is Mike Pokrifke. He's our new video guy. I just put duh in there for you, Elif. Elif Garris, my producer, and I, and we were setting up for the interview and recording it as the interview got rolling.
You could just use your iPhone to film, you know.
Yeah, but
it would make you feel important that you got a big old heavy camera. Yeah.
Oh, it's not on your thing here. On Wiki, it has your kids' names, one of whom is named after a moon from Uranus. Is that right, or something like that?
Yeah, moon of Uranus. Yeah. Right, right. You thought my kids' names would be in a book? Why would you think that?
Because I was thinking sometimes in the bio here, they have the little
yeah,
thing
no,
the
I
end.
Just, you know, why should you care what the name of my kids are?
Because it's pretty cool that you named them after a moon.
One of them, after a moon.
Hey, Elif. Okay, so you're rolling now, right?
I assume they're laying down electrons somewhere rather than rolling anything. Just to get with the century.
You can't help yourself, can you?
But there's no good word for it, so I admit there's no good word.
So anytime somebody says, are you taping this, do you immediately correct
I say,
them?
Are you recording it?
Recording it, right.
Right.
Are you laying
That's
down
a good
electrons?
Word. That's a good word. But recording. Rolling. You know,
rolling, nothing's rolling here. We're just digitizing. We're just ones and zeros.
I'll highlight it, but I won't fight it. Yeah. Here's another one. You ready? So when you're on the air, the radio waves don't need air at all. They just need the vacuum of space. So it's really, are you on space? Air is irrelevant.
You're on the air. It was always going to perturb you a little bit. You're not on the
always.
Air. So
right.
What would be, so when I say what? Neil, well, I'm going to hit the button and put a call on. I'm going to say, Neil, you're what? You're propagating in the vacuum?
Exactly.
Of space?
See? That's right. So I guess my point is, it's not so much that I care what words people use. I want people to know that the word no longer applies or never did apply. Then you can keep using it.
Yeah.
If you
speaking
so
of
it's
Donald,
knowledge of you know the just is situational awareness of vocabulary.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're all creatures of habit.
In fact, we all use the word "give me a call" when, of course, that word predates telephones. And you would have a gentleman caller at your front door.
Right.
And when the telephone got invented, we needed a way to say that someone was putting their voice through this machine.
Yeah.
And so they used the, they took the word from the visitor to your front door to apply to what you're doing.
Wasn't it, I read once that they, when people first picked up the phone then, they said, well, how will you initiate the
communication? Yeah, yeah, there's no obvious way to do that. Yeah.
What do you say? And so it was like, ahoy was going to be one of the things, because that's the way a ship would call to another ship. What's going on there, Elif? Mike is ready. Okay, Mike, so you tell me, when, are you rolling?
I'm rolling.
Okay, so we can begin. Neil deGrasse Tyson is in our studios here at WGN Radio. This is his book. It is called Neil deGrasse Tyson, Astrophysics for People in a Hurry.
No, it's called Astrophysics for People in a Hurry, and I happen to be the author of it, even though they made the name big.
No, I think that...
I didn't need my name that big.
Really? You had no say over the cover of this?
I had... There are subtle changes to the cover from its original design, and I didn't want my name that big, but they, you know, the salespeople...
And what does this tell you, the fact that your name is bigger than the topic here?
I don't...
It should trouble you, my friend.
It does. It does. It does.
Because isn't that saying that you are the star and it's not astrophysics that is the star?
Yes. However, when I give public talks...
Yeah.
I come to learn, because I take a vote, not a vote, I take a show of hands each time. I say, how many people know what the subject of my talk is tonight? And very few people know.
Well,
so they're just coming to hear me,
yeah,
like whatever I'm going to say.
Well, but that
so
must,
that's very flattering.
I should say, that would be encouraging, because I'll bet they, while they don't know maybe what you're going to say about astrophysics, or even that you're going to talk about astrophysics, they know you're a scientist, and that you are going to make palatable and understandable and enjoyable to them science.
Something about science.
Something
so they,
about science.
They come for that, no matter what the subject is. So I'm deeply moved when I learn this. And I think this cover jacket design is a literary counterpart to the fact that people would come to a talk.
Is there a favorite part of the book, though, where you go, I'm so jazzed that I'm writing this notion and communicating this fun factoid or concept to people? Like, what's your favorite part of your book?
It's the 12th chapter. It's a curated collection of content that I think will blow your mind. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's what you talk about. So here's some of the things that blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the book, you just remind us that everything that the universe is, from a Starbucks down the corner to the reaches of the universe, started as a dot 1/1,000,000,000th the size of the period at the end of this sentence. I love that.
Right.
I love that.
Right. And so, but before you got to that sentence, you had to read like one of the front pages of the book, where I just had to set you up and say, the universe is under no obligation to make sense to you. And so now I can tell you this, and you could say, gee, that doesn't make sense. Fine. The universe doesn't give a rat's ass.
Okay?
It's just, it is what it is.
But do you bother yourself with what happened before the dot exploded and how the dot got there?
Bother would imply that it somehow affected me emotionally, but no. Yeah, it's an interesting curiosity. It's a frontier of science.
Well, it is.
What was around before the dot?
Sure.
Yeah.
And why did it explode?
And we've got top people working on it. Yeah.
I'll bet we don't. I'll bet we don't, because that's unanswerable, right?
No. You can't say what's unanswerable.
Yeah, my bad.
By the way, was it in Job? A part of the Bible where, you know, there's Job being basically terrorized by God. And then God comes in and says, how dare you question my motives? I'm paraphrasing, of course. And then gives a list of things that no one in the day could really explain. And that was the evidence of God's handiwork, right? And so you read that list, and in the day, it was completely mysterious to everybody. So it's a fascinating list of the frontier of human understanding of nature. And now we've got about 3/4 of what's on that list.
So do you think someday we will resolve the issue I just brought up?
Yeah, I'm just saying that I will not put myself in a situation where I end up saying something is unknowable.
Yeah, but this would be the one, right? I mean,
why?
Well, because
you could have said the origin of the earth is unknowable because no one was around at the time. No, we got that one. Origin of the sun was unknowable because there wasn't even an earth. No, we got that one.
Yeah.
Right? Because we see other stars that how they're born, stars just like the sun. So I'm not going to say that. I'm just not. That you could say it, and then you go on and take on another task, leaving that question to be solved by others who retain the curiosity for that answer.
Yeah, well, I'm not arguing with you. and I am curious about it, and I will leave that task to other people, and maybe humans will someday resolve
it. We got top people working on it.
But I don't.
Because we might not even know what the right question is to ask. whose answer would then give us insight into that question.
Okay, here's another thing that kind of blew my mind in your book, and that is the whole discussion about dark matter and the vacuum.
It gets its own chapter. But by the way, these are terms that I presume you've seen or smelled as headlines went by. Exoplanet, dark matter, dark energy, Big Bang, multiverse. So this book is a summation. I think of it as a consummation of whatever a person's curiosity for the universe might be with the universe itself.
See, when you say consummation, that's sexy. That's good.
That's consummation.
See, there it is.
You got to say it right.
That's why you sold 3,000 seats in Chicago. You're doing a show,
Chicago theater, yeah,
on stage for thousands of people who are paying $30 to $100+ to watch you talk about science.
Yeah. In fact, I don't even want to call it a show because I'm not singing or dancing or anything.
And nobody's interviewing you.
Interviewing me. It's basically a lecture. It's a lecture.
Yeah.
Don't put
that on the ticket or in the marketing materials. Don't put that on the book jacket because you'll sell fewer. Neil lectures you about physics.
I'd like to change the tone that the word lecture has. We go through school knowing that you have to attend a lecture and you have to do homework. And for some reason, in our K-12 or K-16, we come out of that thinking that the task of having to learn something is arduous and something that you don't want, and you want to escape as quickly and as efficiently as possible, so that on the last day of school, that people run down the steps of their high school on the last day, toss their notes in the air, say, "Summer, school's out, summer's here, I've graduated," as though becoming more enlightened was the worst thing that happened in their life. So I don't blame the kids. Something is wrong in the educational system where at the end of school, students aren't saying, "I don't want to start summer. I want to stay in class and continue to learn." That's your only job, is to learn, and somehow people don't want to do that. So I want to change people's attitudes towards the word lecture. But I know it's going to be hard because if someone starts, what do we say? "Stop lecturing me. I don't want to do your homework." Those two words are bad outside of school. Mm-hmm. I want to change that.
I want to go back to dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that I see in the physical universe, I understand is matter, and it applies to the laws of physics.
Matter and energy, yeah.
Yeah, right. And you said, though, that even more than there is that is this dark matter
stuff. Six times more.
Six times more, right. And so if I wave my arm...
Can I say it more cleanly?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's called dark matter, which implies that it's matter, but we don't even know what it is. So we had no right to call it that. It's historic, and we kept it. It's really dark gravity. There is six times as much gravity manifested as we can account for, adding up all the matter and energy that we know and love.
Okay, so as I wave my hand in space in front of me right now,
Am
I swooshing around a bunch of dark, invisible products or things or energies or something? Is it right here in this room, dark matter?
Yeah, but it's not very much of it.
Right, but is there more of that in the universe than there is stuff, right?
Six times more. Six times more.
But then if there's six times more of it and I can see the Earth and the Moon and the stars, why can't I see it?
Oh, great question. Because the dark matter not only doesn't interact with us, with our electrons, protons, neutrons, electromagnetic forces, not only does it not interact with us, it doesn't much interact with itself. And the only way you can get a solid object is if the matter interacts with itself to make molecules. They are forces that keep you together, and rather than have you collapse as a pile of goo under the influence of gravity. That's why you can stand up and walk, resisting the entire gravity of all of Earth.
So
because you are held together by electromagnetic forces, and there's no such counterpart in dark matter. So it's very diffuse throughout the universe.
Would it be safe to imagine it as though flinty little dusty things?
Okay, so if you want the over or under on this, if you're betting a physicist better, you would say...
And I am.
You would say that dark matter is a new class of particle, therefore it would be matter, that has very low cross-section of interaction with us.
And it's small, super-duper small.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, have we ever detected it?
So there are people who suspect that we might be able to detect one out of some stupendously large number of these dark matter particles in a very rare atomic transition that would go on in the nucleus of an atom. And so
we haven't done that yet, though.
Well, they've attempted it, but no one's found it.
We got people working on that, too.
I got people.
He's got people working on that. Neil deGrasse Tyson. By the way, that's the third time I've heard that interview today. I did it once. cut up some of the audio. Now I just listened back to it again. And only now am I starting to grasp what he was even talking about to me. But that business of dark matter is fascinating. And he's really good at it. The video of that conversation in its entirety is going to be posted at WGNradio.com. You'll be able to see that probably by this time tomorrow. I had a couple of cameras in there that he was making fun of as we started the interview. And he is speaking to a sold-out crowd at the Chicago Theater tonight. Tickets are from $30 to $100. And nobody's interviewing him. He said, there's no Steinway piano. I'm just going to come out and talk.
Does he do an encore?
That's right. And then he comes back out. They go, black holes, black holes, do black holes.
What do you hold up to bring a physicist back out?
Dark matter. Right. Dark matter. So where did I get this? I think, is Grant Lynn still publishing? Kevin's in the sports office getting ready for a Rose show. Is Grantland still out there?
I believe they've wrapped up publishing, and they had a good run. I think they were active for about 4 years, but I don't think they post anything fresh or new anymore.
I think I saw this? Maybe it was ESPN or Deadspin. Mm-hmm. But they said, okay, here's the best player for each of 30 MLB's franchises of all time.
Huh.
So, for instance, if I said the Atlanta Braves, who's the best player to ever wear an Atlanta Braves uniform, you would say,
Hank Aaron
is the one they say.
Okay, yeah.
This is open for debate, right? I think it was predicated on the fact that Derek Jeter's number was just retired. And if you said who's the greatest Yankee, you can get into a great argument about that. But
I don't think there's much of an argument there.
You could sure say Derek Jeter, but think of all the people that is not saying too, right? I mean, that's not even saying Babe Ruth.
Well, Babe Ruth is the best Yankee. Well, he's the best player of all time in my book.
Okay, Arizona Diamondbacks.
Luis Gonzalez?
He's on the list of four they considered.
Randy Johnson?
They got Randy Johnson as number one.
Okay.
And that means Curt Schilling doesn't make the cut, right? Curt Schilling?
Yeah, those two are on the same team.
So then think about that.
Yeah, that's a 1-2 punch right there.
Okay, so who did they say for the Cubs? Who did they say for the White Sox? Who would you say is the greatest Cub to ever wear a uniform?
Well, Sosa or Banks?
I hope it's not Sosa. Mm. Please don't let it be Sosa.
That's why I was hesitant to say it. I didn't think many would say Sammy Sosa, but he put up some incredible numbers.
Yeah, it doesn't say popular. It says best.
Yeah.
How about you, Steve? Who do you think greatest Cub, according to this sort of intelligent analysis, is?
I would think Ernie Banks.
Okay.
Billy Williams.
Okay, yeah, Billy. Yeah, that's a good one. And then you can think of some great pitchers that we've had. But really, we loved Kerry Wood, but he's not going to be remembered as one of the all-time great pitchers. He was kind of a flash in the pan who hung around for a while.
Not a long enough career.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I've got the list. I'll run that by you, guy. Thank you, Steve. Here we go. I'll finish this little conversation we had before the news. It's 2:40. This is WGN. John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Fansided.com, which is a website that our Mark Harmon works for, too, sometimes. Fansided.com has the list of the best players by franchise in Major League history. So, Kevin, if you want to play still, you got another minute there.
I think I angered some people even by just uttering the name Sammy Sosa. I was just throwing it out there. I wasn't suggesting he is the best of all time. But 545 home runs in a Cubs uniform, that's pretty good.
Yeah, see, you just did it again. I think that is a suggestion.
No, I'm not saying he is.
No, I was just throwing it into the
conversation.
Just because you love Sammy Sosa so much doesn't mean you've got to keep inserting him into the conversation.
I'm not saying he should be, but...
if there was a list, though, of heroes fallen, I mean, think about that. Sammy Sosa should be the greatest Cub ever. We should love and revere him. I wonder if anybody else accomplished so much for a team, A-Rod, for instance, in the Yankees, that the whole town, team, organization has sort of turned on, and they now don't love them as much as they should. Who else has fallen further in the graces of their own fan base?
Some ways, Derrick Rose.
Sammy Sosa. Yeah.
Outside of the baseball world, but I mean, a little bit.
Brett Favre has gotten past it now, right? But wasn't there a time?
Oh, I think Favre, is revered in New York, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. I think everywhere Favre has gone, people today, when he retired his number, all three of those organizations would be happy to have him.
Which time?
What do you mean?
Which time after? Didn't he retire 4 or 5 times?
Yeah, right. That's true.
I mean, he wasn't beloved in Green Bay right after he left.
Well, not right after he left.
Right, okay.
And there was some tension between them sort of kicking him out and bringing Aaron Rodgers in. So there was some tension there.
That's all I'm saying is it fits the mold.
Like I said, I completely agree with you, Steve. He's hated everywhere he goes. Okay, so here's the list. Arizona Diamondbacks, best player of all time is?
Randy Johnson, is that?
Atlanta Braves, best player is?
Hank Aaron.
Baltimore Orioles.
Cal Ripken.
You're three for three. None of these are really hard. Now, the Boston Red Sox, you would say Ted Williams. Not David Ortiz, not Pedro Martinez, not Yastrzemski, not Carlton Fisk, not Roger Clemens, not Wade Boggs, not Jim Rice. Chicago Cubs. You guys are going to settle on...
You said we forgot one?
I think
we did. Rhino?
Yeah, we didn't even mention Ryan.
Yeah.
Think about it. Ryan Sandberg. If you want to go way back, Cap Anson, but I didn't see him play much, so I don't have a good feel for Cap. Ron Sano, probably not as great as Ryan Sandberg was, but he, obviously more loved.
Yeah, he...
Fergie Jenkins?
And if you were to put him in biblical terms, right, he didn't quite lead him to the promised land, but it got him closer, Ryan Sandberg. Right?
Yeah, right. He accomplished more that way.
Got him into the playoffs in 84.
Well, Sano was a 69 Cub. That was pretty dang close.
Pretty dang close.
Okay, so Fergie Jenkins, Ron Sano, Cap Anson, Sammy Sosa, Ryan Sandberg. They say it was Ernie Banks.
Yeah.
Chicago White Sox.
Frank Thomas.
Yeah, it's not even. You know, Paul Konerko, God bless you. Joe Jackson. Appreciate what you did for us, Shoeless.
Good movie.
It's Frank Thomas. It's Frank Thomas. I'll give you one more team. Cincinnati Reds.
Pete Rose.
Not Johnny Bench, not Barry Larkin, not Joe Morgan.
Oh, it's got to be Pete Rose.
Pete Rose is correct answer.
I'm impressed, Kevin.
I know. Well, what are you, a sports guy? Look at this. How about this one? This one, Detroit Tigers.
Cy Young? Or not Cy Young.
That guy. The guy. The guy,
Cobb,
the guy.
That, McClain, Denny McClain.
Cobb is correct.
Ty Cobb.
Los Angeles Angels.
Maury Wills.
They say Los Angeles Angels here, not Anaheim
I would already say Mike Trout, despite him only being in the league for 5 years.
That's why I think that's interesting. They say Mike Trout, which is a lot of guys are going, wait a minute, are you kidding me?
Trout will go down as a top 50 player of all time.
Can I test Kevin?
All right, go ahead.
Because you've got the answers.
Yeah, okay.
San Diego Padres. Well, Padres
Tony
are easy,
Gwynn.
Too. Yeah.
That's a gimme.
Right. Yeah, there it is. Tony Gwynn, not
never struck out more than 40 times in a season.
Neither have I.
That's a great point. You're right there in the conversation
that's a nice
with great Padres.
That's a nice stat to have in your back pocket about Tony Gwynn. Never struck out more than 40 times
Meanwhile,
in a season.
Meanwhile, some players are striking out 200 times a season.
Schwarber struck out about 40 times in a doubleheader. I'm loving it, and I want to buy into the myth, but that guy is still hitting below 200. And I'm not getting mad.
The scales of justice are still way in his favor.
He has to learn to hit to the other side of the field. And if he doesn't do that, he's not going to achieve his potential. It's making me crazy. Yes. I mean, he needs me to tell him that, right? He doesn't know this.
About 85 and sunny today. Cubs are home. Offense is going to break out tonight.
The wind is blowing out at about 632 miles an hour.
Is it really? I hope so.
It's useful.
Our pitchers need that. Susan, what did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi.
I just get upset when people bash Sammy. I mean, the guy's like this, you know, comes from probably a pretty uneducated. We all loved him when he ran around with the flag. And like they say, he and Mark McGwire made, you know, the interest in baseball sky high. And then they pretty much threw him under the bus. They used him.
What is the reason that we've come to not like Sammy Sosa anymore?
Because he was a scapegoat. I mean,
for what? For us not winning the World Series or getting into the World Series?
Saying, he was on steroids or whatever. That was our guy to throw. But I think the Cubs had no problem using him as a, you know, parading him around.
Okay, but hold on a second, because I actually think that's a fair question. What is the reason that we don't like Sammy Sosa anymore? Other teams have embraced their former steroid users. They've welcomed them back into the fold. McGwire is a hitting coach for the Cardinals, for crying out loud. So what is it that ticks you off about Sammy Sosa? Was it that he left the stadium before the last game that season? Was it the corked bat? Was it the steroids? Was it that we just didn't win with him? Kevin, what was the reason?
Yeah, I would say it's a mix of all of that, and he left on bad terms. As you mentioned, he walked out of Wrigley before the game was complete. His final game is a Chicago Cub.
Was it that he bleached his face?
I can't, can't knock him for that.
Susan, thank you for the phone call.
I think it's the steroids more than anything, though.
Yeah, I suppose so.
It just leaves a sour taste in all of baseball
fans.
And
we were all suckered, because I've had arguments with people about this. I do not remember us going, wow, that's weird. Everybody's hitting 50 home runs this year, and two of the guys are going to break the all-time record by a lot. Nobody seemed to be too interested in that. That's my recollection. Do you remember it that way? Were we having concurrent with McGuire and Sosa's race a conversation about steroids in baseball at the time?
No. I think the overall everyone was just enjoying the ride.
I
it was
it.
Fun. That's
the,
all. I mean, there were some people reporting on it.
That's
and
right.
Everyone just kind of, you know, brushed it under the table and moved on and said, ah, don't worry about it. Let's watch this guy hit a ball 500 feet three times
Steve's
in one game.
Yeah, but no, the conversation was about what?
They're taking away apart the ball because the ball was juiced.
Yeah, that was the juiced ball. We,
right.
didn't
even,
we had the first word right, but we had the second word wrong. It was the players. Joe, what did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I agree. Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire were juiced. And if you recall back when they started blasting all these home runs, their bodies increased almost. Sammy Sosa almost doubled in size.
We should have noticed that too. Yeah.
Well, one thing for sure, you guys are forgetting. Sammy got caught with the cork bat.
Yeah.
I mean, twice he's been shown to be a cheater. So I mean, why would anybody want to support him?
By the way, hey, let me ask you this question here, Joe, while I got you on the line. St. Louis Cardinals, according to this website, greatest player to ever wear a St. Louis Cardinal uniform was who?
Well, you would have thought it was Mark McGuire.
It's not.
Stan Musial.
But
would you make it interesting for us for a second, Kevin? Could you not be right so quickly?
All right, I apologize.
It's not Bob Gibson. It's not Dizzy Dean. It's not Lou Brock or Rogers Hornsby or Albert Pujols, for crying out loud, or even the Wizard of Oz.
It right.
was Stan Musial. Yeah. That's an interesting point. Yep. Thanks for the phone call.
Okay.
Yeah, have a good day. Hey, Carol, this is John. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Well, I said that Mark McGuire got a 23-minute standing ovation when he broke the record. So why are we saying that there's something wrong with all of these men?
Well, because he took steroids. You heard about
that. I know, but I realized that, but didn't they know that then?
You mean when they gave him the standing ovation? Yeah, that's kind of it. No, at the time. Wait. When he broke the record, did they know that he was using performance-enhancing drugs? No, we did not.
Oh, see. Okay, then.
No.
I should clarify, he is with the Padres now, but he was with the Cardinals as a...
I had him as a hitting instructor at the Cardinals. He's
yeah,
with
for,
the Padres.
For a couple of years, then he went to the Dodgers, now he's with the Padres. I'm
trying to think of who else, though, got in trouble like that, came back and they got a standing ovation when they came back.
Well, Pete Rose, think about what happened with him in the Reds. And
do they embrace him in Cincinnati?
I think so, yeah. Like I mean, him? They just this year are putting him in their team Hall of Fame. You know, each team sort of has you know, retiring numbers, things like that. The Reds have their own little team Hall of Fame, so they're going to induct him into that this year.
They are. Boy, what a conundrum for them that whole thing is. Tom, you're on the air. You're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Hi, John. You need to, and you know this is the father of a baseball player. It's on base percentage, not hitting. So Schwarber is not doing as well.
Yeah, but his OBP isn't that great right now either, not for a leadoff guy. Right?
That's true. But it's just that the more and more we talk about all these other stats, his batting average tends to be the one we still focus on, whereas...
No, I get that, and I think you're right about that. I mean, I'm talking out of my league here, Kevin, but OBP matters more than BA, right?
Sure, but if you're batting 179, that's not good, no matter what your OBP.
I think his on-base percentage is like 370, isn't it?
It's 313 right now.
Oh, no,
which
it's 313.
Which isn't great.
That's not good. And I hate to talk like this, Tom, because we love us some Schwarber, right?
But by the way, John, I was surprised at how many of those answers to those, you know, who is the person most remembered at each of those baseball teams, and I was thinking why, and it's because I collected baseball cards in the 50s and the 60s.
Oh, no kidding, really?
Yeah.
My son got for his birthday, the day he was born, a guy gave him the complete set of Topps baseball cards, all in sleeves, all in a great big book. And then the next
year,
it would have been 19, I should know this, right? I think, what was Grant born? Hey, Steve, when was my son, Judy, when was my son Grant born? Do you remember? Grant was born in 1988, I think.
How old is he?
I don't even know. He's about that old. But then the next year we got him one for 89, and then 90, and 91, and 92. And he wanted to start playing with the baseball cards.
No, no.
And I said, Grant, and he's five now, you know. It's like he's old enough to play with baseball cards. And I said, you understand that by taking them out and playing with them, like taking all the Chuck Knoblocks out and putting them in a special little book and just messing with them is going to devalue them. You know, I'm having this conversation with a kid who's like six. And he goes, yeah, I know, but I still want to play with them. And I said, okay, but someday you're going to wish that we hadn't done this, right? He goes, yeah. I mean, really, what's the point of giving a kid every Topps baseball card for a given year and then telling them he can't mess with them? You know, why torture the kid, right? So I said, okay, you get to do that.
Just go out and buy individual packs and let him, you know, play with those. And
Yeah. Wonder what the value of that would have been. 88, 89. What if you had every one of those? Tom, do you have any clue on that?
No, it's actually too soon for those because basically they start getting value when they become Hall of Famers and retire and stuff like that. So I would just, if he still has them, I mean, not broken up or even broken up, just put them away. And my mother, bless her heart, did not throw out my baseball cards. I actually had a rookie mantle, the rookie mantle, but the second rookie mantle. There was the Bowman and Pops were doing cards back then.
Wow, that's fun. That's fun.
How much would a mantle card be now?
Do you know?
I think it's held up its value, but my whole collection actually has gone down in value from when I sold it.
Shoot me a number. I got to go. What's your number?
God, serious five figures.
Wow. Tom, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate you listening and sounding off. All right, it's 3 o'clock. Rose in the studio with that same perplexed look that you've come to know and love.
Mm, very familiar sight on Rose's face.
It's not it's perplexed, isn't it?
It's I think it's angst-driven. That's how I describe it.
Well, that's Rose on a good day. I mean, and then you've got all of this going on, Anna, and it's more than a man should be asked to bear.
But everyone in the Tribune Tower is so excited because Condoleezza Rice was spotted here at some point today, and so she's on a
book tour. You could have grabbed her and come to her and said, help us, lead us from
Tell
this
us
chaos.
What to do.
What do we do?
This is what I have been doing. I have been calling all of my Republican friends and saying, is this going to be okay? And I'm not getting yes is a very common answer.
Mm-hmm. Your friend Bob Corker said no.
Right. I mean, how about, don't you think this is kind of interesting? And Bob Cornyn, right, who was up for the FBI, says, no.
Kind of busy. Got a lot on my plate right
now. Yeah, I don't really want to be considered for it. And then you had Trey Gowdy always looks like he's about to start a bar fight. He's got that look on his face, he's wide-eyed,
good.
Like, he's always angry at something.
Remember him questioning Hillary and the Benghazi stuff?
Sure.
That was classic.
Yes. He's a very intense customer.
He's smart.
And I just think that when he says, no, not interested in the FBI job, because he's like perfect for it. He's got a central casting. I mean, but all the Republicans, there seems to be something going on here.
And what do you think that is, Ro?
I just think that they seem to be sort of now, they're circling their own wagons, and it's not necessarily around the president. Hmm. Right, as the president is about to make his most important, first foreign trip.
Well, and that whole conversation about should the FBI be a political appointee, I never even thought about that before.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's so much debate about. There's so much to learn understand the FBI already.
Yeah.
And should you pull someone in this climate from outside the FBI, wouldn't that be a
who's
hard
just
learning?
As confused as everybody is in the White House, you mean?
Potentially with the lack of experience.
But should it be an ally of the president is my point. Should it be like the president's guy who's going to go to bat for him, the FBI director, or should it be not necessarily that? And it sounds like this president wants somebody who's loyal to him, which Comey was not. Mm-hmm. And I never even thought about that concept before.
Sure. And Merrick Garland, who has Chicago ties, not interested in being the FBI chief. Another thing that came out today.
Ro Khan.
Did anybody ask him? I'm interested.
You're interested.
You are. I'll take the job.
Add a name to the list.
I'm going to get out of your way. Have a really swell show, kids.
Thank you.